This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
Secretary of State John Kerry, in his remarks here, made it very clear that this cannot be just a talk shop, that it is really very important for the nations of the world to take on the issue of corruption, which he said is as important a battle as the one we have against extremism.
That's VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez reporting from the London Anti-Corruption Summit. Details coming up.
Also, longtime Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni took his fifth oath of office today, and Reuters reports five people were killed and 19 wounded in northeastern Nigeria after a bomb exploded at the front gate to Maiduguri state government offices today.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, longtime Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni took his fifth oath of office today. The celebrations took place against a backdrop of tension. The government cut all social media ahead of the inauguration, and the opposition continues to contest the results of the February 18th poll. Lizabeth Pala has more from Kampala.
Crowds were in high spirits as they made their way to the Kololo airstrip Thursday. Supporters, decked out in yellow, the color of the ruling NRM party, danced to marching bands and musicians as they waited. President Yoweri Museveni arrived amid a chorus of cheers, and within the hour, he was sworn in to his fifth elected term in office. One supporter traveled from Karamoja, around 480 kilometers away.
Yeah, we came on the bus. We are too excited. Yeah. We voted for him in the election. Yeah. Actually, with a percentage of 93% in our district. We are big supporters. And we shall need him for again the next term.
However, in downtown Kampala, police presence was high after unrest the day before. Opposition leader and top Museveni rival Kizza Besigye had escaped house arrest and appeared in town, drawing throngs of supporters Wednesday. His party held an alternate inauguration, proclaiming him the people's president. Besigye finished second in the February poll, but the opposition contested and called for an independent audit of results. Police rearrested Besigye Wednesday and dispersed the crowd using tear gas. Witnesses say police beat shopkeepers with sticks. One shopkeeper says he cannot celebrate today.
They find us when we are closing the shop. They told us, hey, you close your shop now and you go. They started starting caning seriously without something to do. Now what should we do when we are in our government? That is the law. They're just caning seriously. Men and women, anyone, they enter into the building. Now what should we do?
Videos of police officers beating civilians emerged online, even though the government had blocked all social media shortly after the opposition tweeted a video of Besigye's rival swearing in Wednesday. This is the second time a social media blackout has been enforced. The first time was during the vote in February. However, many with smartphones have gotten around the blockade by using a VPN, virtual private network. Earlier this month, the government banned journalists from covering the opposition's activities. President Museveni has been in power since 1986. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
In related news, the wife of former Ugandan opposition presidential candidate Kizza Besigye is calling for his immediate and unconditional release from police detention. Winnie Byanyima says she is concerned about her husband's health and the lack of information about his whereabouts. Reports say Besigye is being detained in the northeastern town of Moroto in the Karamoja region. It's the same area where, during colonial times, political dissidents were held.
The One-day anti-corruption summit in London has ended. British Prime Minister David Cameron, who hosted the event, described the problem as a cancer that reaches around the world. Countries attending the summit issued a 34-page communique promising to tackle such problems as tax evasion, bribery, doping, and match-fixing in sports. VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez attended the summit. From London, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa about the significance of the event and U.S. concerns that the summit results in action and not just words.
Secretary of State John Kerry, in his remarks here, made it very clear that this cannot be just a talk shop, that it is really very important for the nations of the world to take on the issue of corruption, which he said is as important a battle as the one we have against extremism, through a very important line between the issue of extremism and corruption, reminding us that it was the anger of a fruit vendor in Tunisia in 2011 that touched off the Arab Spring. What we saw from that was the destabilization of much of the Middle East, and the rest is unfortunate history. So this is an important wake-up call that leaders of the United States and Britain, of course, hosting this summit, say is important for the world to hear. We're used to seeing the blame being put squarely on leaders in places like Africa, Latin America, Afghanistan, and while certainly there has been some criticism of corrupt practices in those countries, the focus is shifting in a very interesting way on countries that are facilitating that corruption. It's funny that this summit is being held here in London, which is considered one of the world's top tax havens, and where much of the money that's stolen in places like Nigeria, Afghanistan, ends up in banks and in real estate in this very city. The United States has been also criticized for facilitating the creation of anonymous businesses. Secretary Kerry acknowledged that there is some responsibility to be borne. Says it's time, for the sake of world stability, to tackle this issue.
Now, is this a personal matter for British Prime Minister David Cameron? He issued a statement that said, quote, "The evil of corruption reaches into every corner of the world. It lies at the heart of the most urgent problems we face, from economic uncertainty to endemic poverty to the ever-present threat of radicalization and extremism."
Prime Minister Cameron has come under criticism himself. This is after the release of the Panama Papers, which showed that his father had a fund that was offshore that was meant to protect him and investors from paying taxes. And the Prime Minister has said that he had a stake in that fund. So there has been some criticism that he may have called this summit to sort of stem that criticism. But the overarching issue here is that for some time, what are described as the world's elite, we're talking about the United States and Britain, have been looking at the issue of corruption as one that's directly tied to security in the world and to the rise of extremism. So this is very timely, and the summit is meant to bring the issue out into the open for everyone in the world, both those who are stealing the money and those who are helping them hide the stolen money, to face the issue. Very interesting comment from the president of Nigeria here, President Buhari, in his remarks at the opening of the summit, praised and thanked Mr. Cameron for what he said was a courageous decision to hold the summit.
What is expected to come out of this summit?
Well, the summit has, first of all, provided a venue for the United States and for Britain to announce measures they are taking, Britain saying that it is putting in place measures that include establishing a public register of companies that reveals very publicly who exactly owns those companies in Britain. It's the first country in the world to do so, the United States. Recently, the Obama administration introduced measures to crack down on money laundering, to obtain information, hand it over to law enforcement, and go after that. More concretely, there is a communique. The aim of that communique is to show what each individual country will do to expose and to punish corruption.
That was VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez at the London Anti-Corruption Summit. He spoke to Jody Kepawa.
Reuters reports 5 people were killed and 19 wounded in northeastern Nigeria after a bomb exploded at the front gate to Maiduguri state government offices today. The attack follows an incident yesterday when civilians prevented a suicide bomber from detonating explosives at a mosque on the outskirts of the city. The two events interrupted several months of relative quiet in the city. The Nigerian military is waging a campaign to flush Boko Haram militants from nearby forests as suicide bombers plague towns, schools, and villages in 3 northeastern states. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Longtime Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni took his 5th oath of office today. The one-day anti-corruption summit in London has ended. British Prime Minister David Cameron, who hosted the event, described the problem as a cancer that reaches around the world. And Reuters reports 5 people were killed and 19 wounded in northeastern Nigeria after a bomb exploded at the front gate to Maiduguri state government office today. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is calling on the Kenyan government to reconsider its recent announcement to close refugee camps that house as many as 600,000 people. The agency is profoundly concerned about the effect of the closings on people who depend on Kenya's generosity and willingness to protect those forced to flee their homes due to persecution and war. Reuters News reports that Kenya is drawing up a timetable to close the Dadaab refugee camp. In addition, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry issued a statement forcing deep concern about the decision. He urged Kenya to maintain its long-standing leadership role in protecting and sheltering victims of violence and trauma. Nora Sturm is a spokesperson for the UNHCR. She spoke with me about the impact that closing the refugee camps in Kenya would have.
There's close to 600,000 refugees living in Kenya right now, mostly from Somalia, South Sudan, but also from Burundi, the DRC, Rwanda. If the government of Kenya decides to close the camp of Dadaab in the southeast of the country, that would have huge, potentially devastating consequences for the hundreds of thousands of refugees who live there, who, for the most part, from Somalia. And any return of these individuals to their home country could put them at great risk of danger and insecurity. They fled violence and war. The conditions in the country of origin are, for the most part, not conducive to return in many parts of the country.
What is the reasoning that the government is saying is behind their intentions to close the camps?
The principal reasons that the government have cited are of an economic, security, and environmental nature as their principal motivations for closing the Dadaab refugee camp.
And if this does happen, then where would these people go?
It's too early to speculate at this point what will happen to the refugees who live in Dadaab camp and what their fate would be. But in any case, it's very difficult to imagine how returning hundreds of thousands of people could be done in a way that guarantees the voluntary nature of their return to the country of origin, and that it's hard to imagine that it could be done in conditions of safety and dignity. So we're very strongly calling on the government of Kenya to reconsider its decision to do this and to maintain its long tradition of offering protection and asylum to people who have fled the region.
Do you have any reaction from other countries regarding this decision?
I know the U.S. government is also asking the Kenyan government to continue upholding its international standards with regards to refugees and the protection of refugees and the offering of asylum and protection to them.
So at this point, it's just an intention. They have not really made a decision on it, but it appears that it will happen. And do you know how long it would take for them to actually close the camps?
I don't. It's really difficult to speculate at this point what the next steps will be.
That was Nora Sturm, a public information officer for the UNHCR. She spoke with me from Geneva.
Some European countries will be allowed to continue their border controls as Europe continues to struggle with the influx of migrants and refugees. The European Council decided that Austria, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, and Norway will be allowed to continue the controls for 6 months, but they will be required to consult with neighbors to ensure the controls are implemented only where necessary and proportionate. Meanwhile, the European Union and Turkey appear at a stalemate over EU's requirement that Turkey revise its anti-terrorism laws. The EU wants the definition of a terrorist narrowed so as not to be used to restrict human rights, but Turkey's president has flatly refused to do so. The EU wants Turkey to make the change before allowing visa-free travel in Europe for Turkish citizens. It's part of the deal between the EU and Turkey to restrict the flow of migrants into Europe.
The chairman of the Inter-Burundi Dialogue Commission, which is attempting to help restore peace in the country, says Burundi's current problems have deep roots in the past. He says impunity for crimes has been a problem for decades. Moses Habyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza formed the Inter-Burundi Dialogue Commission last year to deal with political turmoil and violence. Violence erupted last April after the president announced he would seek a third term in the office. The opposition called it unconstitutional and violated the Arusha peace accords that ended the country's civil war. The panel consists of 15 members that include religious leaders, political actors, and civil society members. However, opposition leaders who are currently in exile have raised concerns about the membership and transparency of the Dialogue Commission. Commission Chairman Justin Zoisaba says the panel has carried out dialogue in all 18 provinces in the country.
We are dialoguing with Burundians. We are looking for durable peace. Since last April 2015, have been in crisis in Burundi. But doesn't mean that it was started in April only. It means the causes might be there in the past. Because since 1961, we have been in a crisis, killing, massacres.
Burundi had been enjoying peace and stability. Violence that began in April last year has led to deaths of about 500 people and the displacement of 260,000. Nzoisaba says since 1962, there have been few convictions for politically related crimes.
Some of the issues they are raising as the cause of this crisis is the impunity. Since 1961, when we have elections, there is a crisis, killings, and no one is punished up to now. Maybe people are thinking that if I do this, I will be not punished. So this is one of the issues that people raised.
Senior United Nations officials have warned the Security Council that Burundi is at a critical juncture, experiencing a deep political crisis and rapidly escalating violence. They say the crisis has serious implications for the country's stability and ethnic harmony. Targeted killings continue to rock the capital. Pierre Nkurikiye is the Burundi police spokesman.
Yes, some criminal acts are reported, but these are normal criminal acts, which can also happen in each country. Many weapons seized on them, or they were coming from Rwanda. Sometimes killers use Burundi national police and the army uniforms.
Experts say the only way out of the current crisis is through inclusive dialogue. The regional mediated inter-Burundi dialogue was suspended more than five times since last year, with both government and opposition blaming each other for stalling the talks. The dialogue was expected to resume early this month, but was postponed until late this month for further consultations. The mediation will be overseen by former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa. The government has said it will not sit at the same table with the same opposition members who it accuses of plotting the failed coup last year. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The World Health Organization is recommending a new, easier, and cheaper treatment for multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis that it says will save the lives of tens of thousands of people. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Every year, nearly 500,000 men, women, and children worldwide develop multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis. And each year, 190,000 of these people die. The World Health Organization says the death rate is high because fewer than 20% of the patients are being properly treated. Director of the WHO's Global TB Program, Mario Raviglione, says a new test and a new treatment regimen could be a game changer for those with multi-drug-resistant TB.
These two new recommendations from WHO enable MDR-TB patients, one, to benefit from a test that will quickly identify who is eligible for the shorter MDR-TB treatment regimen, and two, complete treatment in half the time at nearly half the cost of today.
The new diagnostic test yields results in just 24 to 48 hours, down from the 3 months or longer currently required. The shorter treatment regimen costs less than $1,000 per patient and can be completed between 9 and 12 months. Conventional treatment programs for people with multi-drug-resistant TB take between 18 and 24 months to complete at a cost of $1,500 to $3,000. Raviglione says that globally, about 50% of those following this lengthy, costly treatment are cured. He says the other 50% either die or continue to live with this illness for years. He says about one quarter of the patients become discouraged and abandon the treatment regimen before it is ended.
They abandon treatment because the treatment lasts, as you probably know, up to 2 years, with drugs that we all know are fairly toxic in a way. They have side effects, and they are not really liked by patients who have to take them.
There are about 400 labs in developing countries that are able to conduct the new tests and treatment programs, so the WHO believes most people with multi-drug-resistant TB will be able to access the new options. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss whether there's a need for a fundamental change in U.S.-Africa relations. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss U.S.-Africa relations next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.